heard.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. Today, we have a couple of public hearings and a work session. So, got a couple people out. Okay. We'll give... We have a couple people. Why don't we go ahead and start with the public hearing, and then we'll move into the work session when we get everybody here. So I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3254. And Beth, could you provide the committee a summary of the bill, please?
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 3254 would require the Department of Environmental Quality to notify local governments if their area is projected to exceed air quality standards within the next 5 years.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And colleagues, this was a bill that I had put forward as a committee bill because there had been some information in the stories in the Oregonian this past summer about Washington County becoming close to non-attainment and kind of a lack of knowledge about that in a timely way, and we're looking at some ways we can fix that. So I know that we've got DEQ here who's going to talk a little bit about the bill that was put forward was kind of just a stab at let's take a look at addressing the problem. And so we're going to see how we can, if there's something that we can do to make it a little more workable. So why don't we have Palmer Mason and Rachel Sakata from DEQ come up. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Palmer Mason. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Department of Environmental Quality. I have here with me Rachel Sakata. She is an air quality planner at the department, and we'll be happy to talk about House Bill 3254, and I'll let Rachel start.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Sakata, and I'm an air quality planner with the Department of Environmental Quality. Now, I work closely with communities throughout Oregon in trying to address fine particulate, also known as PM2.5 pollution. And I am here today to provide information on House Bill 3254 and answer any questions that you might have. So the Environmental Protection Agency, under the Federal Clean Air Act, sets health standards for six pollutants, including lead, carbon monoxide, ozone, PM2.5, nitrogen dioxide, and sulfur dioxide. Now, states are required to monitor and identify areas not meeting the standards. So those areas that don't meet the standard are designated as non-attainment, and states must develop and implement plans to bring them back into compliance. Now, as you may have heard, being declared non-attainment is very serious for any community. It means a number of things, such as the air is unhealthy, legal requirements are triggered for states to reduce pollution and meet standards, stricter requirements are imposed on new and potentially existing industry, and the stigma of non-attainment can be a deterrent for any for attracting any new businesses. So Oregon has had a history of violating some of the health standards. Back in the mid-1980s and early 1990s, we had a number of communities violating standards for larger particulate known as PM10, carbon monoxide, and ozone. Now, EPA was just starting to regulate these pollutants, and these were all brand new standards. And DEQ was able to work quickly with these communities to bring them back into compliance, and they have all been meeting the standards since then. And as you'll see on this map that you have above you, the areas highlighted with green stars are all former ozone and PM2.5 non-attainment areas. And so now they are all meeting the standard. So it's about eight communities in total. More recently, however, we have had two communities, and that's highlighted with the black triangles, Oak Ridge and Klamath Falls, that are not in compliance with the PM2.5 standards. Now, this is due to EPA recently revising the existing PM2.5 standard, for which all of Oregon was actually previously in compliance for. EPA lowered that standard by half, so it's a big difference. And that's because the existing standard was not protective enough of human health. But I do want to mention that we do have some good news about Klamath Falls, as that they recently came into compliance with the standard, thanks in large part due to the hard work of the local government, businesses, and citizens to implement clean air strategies. And then to maintain the clean air, they must continue to implement these strategies to ensure that they stay in compliance. So DEQ tracks monitored levels across the state. We work closely with communities to assess potential non-attainment status and put prevention programs in place. So for example, we recently reviewed monitoring data last year for Hillsborough that indicated that their PM2.5 levels were high enough to potentially violate the standard. And we were able to meet with and communicate and build relationships with both the city and Washington County to take immediate action to prevent a potential non-attainment problem. They have done a fantastic job of hearing our concerns and mobilizing quickly to prevent a non-attainment problem for the near term and hopefully into future years. So another community that we've also worked closely with recently is the town of Lakeview. As you'll see here on the map, it's an area in the gray triangle. Both Lakeview and Prineville are currently violating the PM2.5 standards but have not been designated non-attainment. And that's because at the time that EPA issued those non-attainment designations, there was not enough monitoring data available. However, we've been able to work with them to develop a voluntary prevention plan that they've submitted to EPA to prevent, hopefully, a non-attainment designation. We've also formed an air quality advisory committee to identify wood stove reduction strategies in Prineville, and also to help the community of Burns make wood stove advisory calls to lower their levels. So we've been trying to do a lot of work with communities to prevent this non-attainment problem. So House Bill 3254 requires DEQ to notify local governments if DEQ determines that an area is projected to exceed air quality standards within 5 years. Now, DEQ is not able to project whether a community will exceed air quality standards within the next 5 years, as the bill language states, for a couple of reasons. First, under the Clean Air Act, EPA is required to review air quality standards every 5 years, and so it's difficult to predict whether or not EPA will revise the standard and to what level. Also, for all of the pollutants that I mentioned earlier, with the exception of carbon monoxide, EPA's determination of whether an area exceeds the standard is based on a rolling 3-year average. So, for example, an area might be attaining the standard during 1 3-year period, but then be exceeding it during the next 3-year period, but then come back into compliance the following 3-year period. So it can really vary. There can also be much variability due to weather conditions, for example, very cold weather or periods of long air stagnation that can affect whether an area might violate the standard. So just to give you a recent example, 2013 was a really cold year, and we saw high PM2.5s all across the state, whereas this past year, 2014, in contrast, was very mild, and so monitored levels were not nearly as high. So it's really difficult to predict 5 years in advance what the weather will be. I also want to mention that all of DEQ's monitoring data is available on our website for anyone to see the current levels of any monitored pollutant. We also make available an annual report that summarizes each year's monitored levels, and we provide a snapshot of previous years. DEQ is always watching the monitored data, and if there could be a potential problem, we work closely with communities to ensure that they know what the levels are and to take any necessary steps that should be taken to prevent any potential violations of the standard. DEQ is committed to creating a healthier environment for all Oregonians by reducing levels of all air pollutants and preventing a non-attainment status for any community. Thank you. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
And if I might, Madam Chair, I wanted to add that we are looking at some different options that DEQ might be able to provide to the committee for this bill. There may be things that we can do beyond what we do today, and as Rachel outlined for you, we think we're very good at doing aggressive outreach with communities, but maybe we can look to potential statutory requirements to make sure that we're not only providing the information to the community, but also the legislative delegation or things like that. So there are some ideas that we're sort of trying to put on the drawing board and take a look at if the committee is really interested in moving forward in that way.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to call the committee's attention to my district, which is the upper left corner there, and how pristine it is.
So noted.
I would second that.
Yeah.
My district.
Yes, you're blessed in your districts. Yes.
What's that?
I said you're both blessed in
it's
your districts.
It's called wind.
Yes.
It blows.
Other questions? I have a couple of questions. So, so you said that you work closely with communities. Can you describe what DEQ currently does, what that process currently looks like for notifying local governments of their non-attainment status?
Madam Chair, certainly I can do that. So for example, we don't get monitoring data for the previous year until about June of the following year. So we're already halfway into the following year. So for instance, in the case of Hillsborough, once we got that data in June of, I believe it would be 2014, we noticed that the values for 2013 were fairly high. And so we immediately started talking with county commissioners and with local governments to say, here's a problem that we're seeing here. And let's think about ways that we can try to lower levels due to wood stove smoke or other sources. So we certainly reach out to communities and folks immediately when we see that there's a problem and try and brainstorm ways to help them reduce their pollution.
And is that, why does it take 6 months to get the data from the last? Is it just a matter of processing it?
Madam Chair, the reason why is, yes, it's because we have to send the samples, the monitor data, to a lab for it to be analyzed, and then we have to make sure that it's quality control checked, and then we have to submit it to EPA so that they can also check it, and so it just takes time, unfortunately. In some instances, for example, in Klamath Falls, we were able to speed up the analysis because we were very curious and we wanted to make sure that they did meet the standard by this year, and so we were able to get some early results. But in general, we usually don't know until about June of the following year.
Representative Colby.
I was curious, and I apologize if I missed this in your testimony. Is there a PM 2.5 level that's associated with becoming an attainment and maintenance area? I mean, what percentage are you towards actually the non-attainment level? Mm-hmm. Is it based on a percentage?
Madam Chair, Representative Halvey, yes. So actually, EPA sets a standard for PM 2.5. There's actually two standards, one which is the daily standard, and that level is 35 micrograms per meters cubed, and they also set an annual standard at 12 micrograms per meters cubed. Oregon has typically had a history of violating the daily standard, so that's 35. And so the communities of Klamath Falls and Oak Ridge, their monitored levels were above that 35 level. For the other communities that have been of concern, they're either right below or very close to it. So anything that sort of gets within a little range of it is when we typically start notifying communities and saying, let's do some prevention work to make sure it's not going to be a problem.
Follow up. So specifically, I was wondering, so what percentage of that non-attainment level does a community become a maintenance area? For example, I mean, is it based on being close to non-attainment? And if so, how close do you have to be to get that green star?
Right. So, Madam Chair, Representative Halvey, So basically,
or the white triangle for Matt.
Right. So the determining whether or not you're in compliance is based on 3 years worth of monitoring data. So, for example, if you have 2012, 2013, 2014, and all those levels are above that 35 standard, then you take that average of those 3 years, and if that average of those 3 years is above the standard, that's how you determine if it's non-attainment. So it's a 3 year average of the monitored data.
But then why don't you tell them once you get to not maintenance?
Sorry. And then as Palmer mentioned, to get to maintenance is if you go below. And so as soon as an area is below the standard, for example, Klamath Falls, if they've recently now just gone below the standard, what the area would do is then work with us to develop a maintenance plan and say, okay, we would be redesignated as attainment. So you basically have to either, so if you're over you're considered non-attainment. If you're under, right, you're considered attainment.
Follow up, but I'm trying to understand, how do you get to that green star, the maintenance, being designated as in a maintenance area? Does that mean at one time you were in non-attainment and now you come back down?
Representative Holvey, sorry, yes, that's exactly what it means.
Old start.
Just trying to get there. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just starting at the EPA's Green Book, and I was looking at this town we're in, Salem, and it says the carbon monoxide, I'm sorry, it says 1 hour ozone. And then it says incomplete data. And so I'm not sure how come they're not called out when they're here, but they're not up there.
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, you were asking about Salem, was it?
Right. It says Marion County, 1 hour ozone, Salem, Oregon. Then they show the non-attainment years all the way up to 2015. And then it just says incomplete data as opposed to under classification. So anyway, I was just curious why Salem got a pass. Is it because we're in it? We're just more deserving.
But we have a green star.
That's conditional.
So I believe, Madam Chair, Representative Benz, I believe that Salem is in compliance now with the ozone standard. I know that EPA has recently proposed changes to the 8-hour ozone standard. And so in that proposal, they've recommended a level between 65 and 70 parts per billion. The current standard is 75. Currently, all areas in Oregon are below any of the proposed levels that EPA has. So if EPA does come out with the standard around 65 or 70, all these areas would be considered in compliance with the ozone standard. So we can certainly follow up on that.
I'm just hopeful that the types of things that don't happen as a result of these kinds of designations. Again, going back to when I've seen this in play, and we were trying to get a some sort of a biomass facility placed into Ontario. We went into the land, the airshed discussions, and I realized just how important this was. And so I'm just was wondering if Salem is encountering difficulties in attracting business by virtue of this type of designation. That was really where I was going with it.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Benz, it looks like we do have some information, current information based on 2012 through 2014 monitoring data, and it looks like the Salem area is around 60 parts per billion. So it's, as I mentioned before, EPA is looking at a proposed standard of 65 to 70, so it's definitely below.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right. But I'll add, Madam Chair, Representative Benz, we take those same concerns very seriously about the permitting challenges in an airshed. So, you know, that is why we've worked aggressively with Lakeview and Klamath Falls, and quite frankly, why we were happy to share the good news about Klamath Falls falling under the daily standard, because that's a big boost for them. They're by no means out of the woods, so to speak, yet, but definitely a big step for that community.
And Madam Chair, Representative Benz, I also want to follow up that with the proposed ozone standard, we've actually gone out and talked with the communities of Medford and Portland and Hermiston. These are all areas that are potentially close to the ozone standard, just to inform them of EPA's proposed rules so that they can be aware of it and also to comment on it if they so choose.
Chair, if I may follow up.
Hello.
I was just checking to see how we stacked up, and I see that California is just a wreck, and I'm happy to say that out loud. And it's, you know, we need to get that word out. I don't know how many difficulties they've got down there getting permits, but according to this EPA chart, it must be considerable. So am I correct in that people actually look at these kind of things, or it actually is more than that, isn't it? They have to get a discharge permit, and they don't get them. Is that what ends up happening?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, it's correct. Any non-attainment designation can certainly be a deterrent for businesses because of the additional restrictions that could be imposed upon new and any industry wishing to expand, so it can require in more costly controls that they would have to put on. And also, if a new business wanted to locate there, it just would be a deterrent because of the extra things that they would have to do, additional modeling analysis and things like that.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one of my questions is, and maybe it's related to what Representative Vince is talking about too, but as you talk about sampling and controls and stuff, what kind of controls do you have in place that factor out anomalies like weather-related events and stuff? I mean, you must have something, obviously, whether it's you mentioned a warm year, cold year, that kind of thing. I mean, if we're talking about Salem emissions, I mean, I would guess our ozone and CO2 goes off the charts here when the legislature's in session. What kind of controls do you built in to just have that kind of, you know, factor so you know what a baseline is? Mm-hmm. How do you factor in what is a baseline that's worthy of looking at and then monitoring versus one that's just kind of capricious and arbitrary?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, you know, it's certainly something that we try and work with communities because we want to prevent any potential non-attainment problems if there is our future cold weather events. As part of that, we have a number of strategies that we employ through doing wood stove changeouts, working with communities to do voluntary wood stove curtailment. So, for example, we ask citizens not to burn on poor air quality days if they can. We do education and outreach. So we try and factor in the fact that there might be some cold weather episodes and work with the community to figure out how can we prepare for that if in case that does happen. And as you can see, we've managed to have that success in Klamath Falls because even with the cold weather that they did have in 2013, even though they were the levels were high across the entire state. Their levels were around 40, whereas in Lakeview, and that's because they had a lot of strategies in place, but in Lakeview, where they didn't quite have as many stringent strategies, their levels were up around 90. So it really can make a huge difference.
And Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, if I can add, Representative Johnson, I mean, one of the challenges for us is much of this is dictated by federal guidance. Which I think maybe is sort of where you were going with. So, you know, the department doesn't have as much discretion as we might have if we were operating a state program. So, and that's because we're a delegated program. We take over the air quality permitting from the EPA and do it here. But if we're going to have that delegated program, we have to follow the federal guidance about evaluating the air quality. And we can certainly give you more specifics about what that entails, but there is a lot of federal guidance about how we do that.
Follow up. Which brings me to my next question. Obviously, the EPA preemption would supersede DEQ actions at the state level, correct, regarding air quality standards?
Right, and the way I'd answer it, Representative Johnson, and jump in at any point, Rachel, is that if we're going to take a delegated program, which we have, so we've taken over the air quality permitting from the federal government and we do it here, we administer it here, we have to follow a delegation agreement. And that agreement has us honoring the guidance about the monitoring and that kind of thing. So it's perhaps not so much a preemption as it's, you know, the feds have said, okay, State of Oregon, you can take this over and you can administer it, but there are rules and regulations you have to follow to do that.
Okay. One more follow-up then. You mentioned in your testimony early on, I think the phrase you used was the stigma of non-attainment. Can you define that? What does that mean, i.e. for a community that would be stigmatized by DEQ regarding air quality?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, probably the best example would be of Klamath Falls. Since they've been designated a non-attainment community, they've been struggling with the challenges to attract new businesses there. And because of the fact that it is a non-attainment community, I know that businesses are less inclined to, for example, put a new facility because of the stricter air quality control requirements that they would have to put on. So they might look somewhere else, say in Medford, where they wouldn't have to put on those costly controls. So I know that for Klamath Falls, it's a huge deal for them to get out of this non-attainment status so that they can begin to help their economic well-being and also improve the health of the community.
And if I can add to Representative Johnson, perhaps stigma is too strong a word, but it is certainly true that if you're dealing with an area of non-attainment and you're a business that wants to locate there or an existing business that wants to expand, you are very likely to face a higher permitting burden than you would otherwise if the air were clean. And to the point that if it's the air is quality situation is that challenging, you may have to purchase offsets or find offsets for your increment of additional particulate matter. So it gets to be a permitting and a financial challenge for businesses, not to mention the fact that the air just isn't healthy and clean for the citizens who live there.
So the follow-up would be then, I guess, from my perspective then, that the stigma of non-attainment, what you're actually telling them is you're closed for business until you change something. I think what you're referring to is much more strenuous than simply saying, you know, you guys need to get in line, because for a community like Klamath Falls or anybody, that's a pretty serious, you know, scarlet letter to hang upon them, if you will. But you just brought up something, Palmer, I wasn't aware of. So is there a credit trading or credit purchasing option regarding air quality standards, i.e. as there is in non-compliance with the low carbon fuel standard too? I wasn't aware of that. We can buy credits
for Representative Johnson.
If I'm exceeding my limitations.
Yeah, it isn't a program like that. I'm not the permitting expert on here, but so I'll give you my general understanding, and we can certainly follow up with you. But if a facility comes in and they are going to add a certain amount of increment or a certain amount of additional particulate to the airshed, and that's going to take them over the standard, or if they're in this situation, they're already over the standard, then they're going to need to find some way to lower their increment. And it may be that they buy out old wood stoves and replace them with new wood stoves, or do something like that. So it's not an
offset.
It is an offset as opposed to a credit, which is on a marketplace that anybody who has to meet the regulatory requirement can buy. It's more of a, you know, I'm a permittee who's trying to meet the standard, and I go and designate a specific project that gives me that offset. Hopefully that was helpful.
Can you provide that information to the committee?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
After that, I just don't know where to begin now.
It's getting deeper.
Because I'm looking at Burns, Klamath Falls, and Lakeview, some of the most depressed areas in our state. And we're saying, no, businesses you can't locate there is what I just heard. And the fact that we would do that to those communities devastates me. I mean, I've heard enough. My questions have been answered.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, maybe I should just be completely clear here. I don't know that it always results in no ability to permit a new facility or expanded business. It's just that the hurdles and the requirements that business face are harder than any other where the air is clean. So in a place like Klamath Falls or Lakeview, you've added another challenge to the challenges they already have. To the point where, as I was talking to Representative Johnson, they may have to go and buy these offsets. So it's not just the permitting and the controls that they have to put on their facility or the way they have to manage their facility. They may have an added cost of having to go and buy out some older infrastructure or something like that. So the unfortunate result of this federal designation, and it is a federal designation of non-attainment, not a DEQ designation, it's a federal designation. We've just made permitting much more difficult in those places, which is why we try to be very proactive and work very closely with the communities. And if I could go back to the Klamath Falls example for a moment, Rachel and I were talking about it before the committee started. I think just a few years ago, they were around 40 micrograms per cubic meter. Now they're down to 34. That is a pretty huge success. And a lot of credit goes to that community, that county, that city. But that's the kind of stuff that we need to do to ensure that the permitting can be as painless as possible, because permitting is already painful enough, right? But to make it as painless as possible, particularly in those places.
If I may then follow up, I mean, I didn't actually come out with it, because a lot of this is just relative, because you look up in the Northeast, Hermiston, Boardman, everything's perfect there. So, and I see we have a lot of clean coal technology supporters behind you, and we have one of our coal-fired plants up there, everything's fine. So are we going to basically look where we expand our industry into areas where you have more wind flow, like into the gorge? Representative Johnson should love that because he'll have lots of industry in his area. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Lakeview, that could be coming out of Nevada from the mines and stuff down there where they're sitting. Same thing with Klamath Falls. Where's the pollution coming from? Because I know it's not industry in those, both those towns.
So let me maybe, Representative, let me answer a part of that, and then maybe you can speak to the specific airsheds, mm-hmm. Lakeview and that kind of thing. I think our point is we would like to see the airsheds in any community clean so that the air quality problems in an airshed aren't a permitting problem. Like, that isn't an issue. It's other business decisions. Is it the right location? Am I near the right infrastructure? Have I access to markets, labor supply? All that other stuff should really drive a business decision. It shouldn't be the permitting. But these are federal standards that we have to implement. And one consequence of having non-attainment is the permitting gets much more difficult. So it is our goal to try to remove that as an obstacle. That's really what we're trying to do.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
So what can the feds do to us if we don't follow their guidelines?
Madam Chair, Representative, we've said, the permitting gets more stringent for communities in those areas.
I'm just saying we're not going to adhere to their permitting. Okay, we say your regulation's too strong. We're not going to let this burns right. When the largest employer is Safeway there. I mean, we have issues when we're going to say no, federal government, we're going to put this plant in Burns because this economy needs it.
So one risk we take if that's the policy decision is that the program, the air quality permitting program, would no longer be delegated to DEQ and would be managed by the Environmental Protection Agency. So that is the most likely consequence of not making sure that we apply all the regulations in the way that the feds require us to do throughout Oregon.
And Representative Weiner, just to follow up on that as well, if the feds do step in, then they basically would mandate this is what you have to do. If the state is able to work with the community, as we have in Klamath Falls, for example, we're able to kind of figure out what strategies are the best ones to put in place for them. What are things that we think that they can do that make sense to them? And so in the instances of Klamath Falls and Lakeview, what we typically do is we identify what are the sources causing the pollution. And as you stated, there's not as much industry, and a lot of that is due to wood stove smoke. Actually, over half is due to wood stove smoke. So we've targeted most of our pollution prevention efforts to focus on wood stove prevention and doing wood stove changeouts and wood stove curtailments and things like that to really try and get to the problem.
I may just one quick follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things when you're studying this, because those are very depressed, and that's areas. And they're using the wood stoves to heat their house. I mean, they're barely feeding their families and everything else. They can't afford the electricity to run electric. Are we looking at ways to get them low-cost power to power these homes and do things like that? Because lots of times we're dealing with solar, wind, different power generation that drives up the cost of electricity rather than down. Is DEQ looking at doing things like that and bringing low-cost power to these homes to where we can, because trust me, I grew up cutting firewood. It's not a fun thing. It's when I could get a pellet stove, it was the happiest day of my life when I could just dump a bag of pellets in. Cutting firewood all summer long to heat your house in the winter times, not pleasant. Is DEQ looking at situations like that where we can help these families out? Because these are depressed economies, and these are people that need help.
Representative, yes, that is certainly something that we look at. In fact, when we've done recent wood stove changeout programs in that area, we've focused particularly on low-income households where we've been able to provide them a new certified device at full cost and covering both the purchase and installation of these devices. And we also have been able to work with the community in recognizing that low income or those who use wood stoves as their sole source of heat need something to burn on these cold days. Otherwise, they're going to freeze. And so we've provided some flexibility for them as well, but also making sure that we educate them on how to burn properly. So we We do keep that in mind because we know what's happening in the, we recognize what's happening in the community and who's there.
Yeah. Representative Widener, if you take a look at the other bills that are up for public hearing today, we're definitely looking at that subject. Representative Holvey.
Thanks. I'm sure you almost touched on the answer to my question, so I was kind of curious, though, about when it comes to permitting a facility that has point source pollution, and do you have the ability to refuse to permit even though their pollution source falls under the non-attainment level?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, I guess I'll take an attempt at that question, and we may need to follow up on that. I mean, the short answer is yes, if the project is not going to meet our rules. I mean, they have to demonstrate that they're going to meet our rules. So I'm assuming you're not talking about that issue. You're just, you know, they otherwise met our rules.
Right.
They're below, the 35 micrograms standard, you're asking, would we have the ability to deny the permit?
Correct.
I think it would really depend on the specific project and what they're proposing to do. And if they don't have the right emission controls or operational plan, then yes, we would. But it would really be a project-by-project analysis. So we may need to talk about this more as a sidebar, because other than that answer, I don't know what else I can tell you.
Follow up.
In terms of, you know, letting local governments know that they're close to non-attainment or getting that, and then comes along, you know, DEQ then permits a facility that takes them so close to non-attainment that then they're in trouble, potentially in the following years, and the local government doesn't have anything to say about it, I guess is my point. And you know, I think we've sort of discussed that in the past, is should local governments have the ability to say, well, wait a minute, this is using up too much of our airshed capacity to permit this, and it's going to put us too close in jeopardy, and we have long-term economic development in mind for other siting things in the future. You know, it seems to me local government may need to be able to weigh in that process and say, this facility isn't something that we see as in our long-term best interest in terms of non-attainment.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, if I can respond, DEQ doesn't have a tool like that to reserve increments in the airshed, in that way. Through our air quality planning, what we're trying to do is make sure that ensure the air is clean enough, that we've lowered below these standards enough that these aren't issues, that communities aren't having to choose between Project A and Project B, between, you know, Business A and Business B, because they're worried about their future airshed. I mean, we're trying to lower the airshed overall, or improve the airshed overall.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're obviously asking for authority to do this in the statute that you don't think you have now. Is that the real reason for asking for this piece of legislation? Because I would think you must have some ability in your existing rules to do this anyway.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Helm, if you're talking about House Bill 3254, that was a committee bill to look at ensuring that local governments do get advance notice, as much advance notice as possible, that there might be a non-attainment issue. It's not a proposal the department is asking, and as we've spoken to the chair, and I think the committee has heard a little bit, I think the bill as written would be difficult for us to implement, but I think the chair's interest was in talking about other things that we can do to give as much early notice to local governments, affected communities, about these issues. We feel like we do a good job today, but there may be other things we can do, and one missing piece that I was suggesting earlier is informing the local legislative delegation about that, not just the communities themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's a good idea. You've got a lot of rules and a lot of authority to do stuff similar. I'm just wondering if it's necessary.
And I think based on the conversation that we've had today, I think it's also looking at it's not just letting the local governments know, but also, you know, how can we better work with those communities that are impacted by this in terms of some of the things that Representative Holvey was talking about how it could impact the long-term economic development of the area, if, you know, what are the repercussions or the, I'm sorry, the effects of coming close to the non-attainment status. So I think we might look at that too. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Forgive my ignorance if this was already covered. So you referenced the wood-burning stoves, correct, as far as a contributing factor to this pollution in the airshed. What about federal forest fires? How's that factor in?
Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, forest fires, so forest fires, for example, if you're thinking of the large forest fires that occur in the summer, those actually can, that data can actually be removed as part of the consideration. What we found is that a lot of the violations, at least in terms of PM2.5, occur during the winter time when there's a lot of wood stove burning going on and there aren't these forest fires that happen. And then you also see sort of this pattern, this nighttime pattern when people come home to light their wood stoves, and that's when you see the monitored values start to creep up, and then they go down as everyone goes to sleep, and then they go back up again in the morning when they stoke the fires. So a lot of it really does point to wood stove smoke is what we found.
Follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
So the EPA is concerned about people's wood stoves in the wintertime that they, as Representative Widener spoke of, because basically they're poor communities and this is how they keep their energy costs low. I've been one of those individuals. But they're not concerned about their own poorly managed federal timberlands dumping tons of carbon and whatnot into the sky. We'll remove that conveniently, but we'll beat down on impoverished areas that use wood stoves.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, as much as this might surprise you, I can't really speak for EPA. I can only speak for DEQ. I think the idea here is that we're looking at the air quality that people breathe in a day-in and day-out basis. And as Rachel pointed out in the summer, we do get air quality problems that come from wildfires, and they are huge contributors. So I don't want to dismiss that as a source of air quality issues. It's just that the standard is written in such a way or is aimed at the day-to-day exposures that people have to a fine particulate. And the data that we have shows that that is really a wintertime phenomenon that's mostly driven by older wood stoves. So, and that standard is a national standard, which is set to ensure that communities across the country, as much as across Oregon, all try to meet that standard and have clean air. We do work with the U.S. Forest Service and our own Oregon Forestry Department around prescribed burning, which is, I understand, a valuable tool for trying to reduce those wildfires. So we do have a program where we work with them, and I can give you more information about that. But again, the standard, the national standard, is meant to try to get at daily exposures as opposed to these large events, but that are more infrequent and happen over a shorter period of time.
Follow up. I would argue with you that they're not infrequent where I come from. They're pretty much a way of life these days. I find it, again, I know you're not the EPA, but I find it hilarious that we're talking about wood stoves in the winter and acting like forest fires that just consume everything are somehow just something we can conveniently sweep under the rug. If you really want to fix that problem, you manage it, meaning you harvest it and replant. As far as the EPA swooping in on us because we don't comply with this, quite frankly, doesn't scare me nearly as bad as the DEQ continuing to gain more influence, because as somebody who's had to deal with the DEQ, I'd much rather deal with the EPA, quite frankly.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hurd. Thank you guys very much for that. Look forward to keep working with you on this bill. Okay. We only have one other person signed up, Mike Freese with AOI. Is there anybody else here who'd like to testify on this bill? All right.
Members of the committee, for the record, Mike Freese. I represent Associated Oregon Industries.
the purpose for the testimony, and as you see, I marked on the sign-in sheet is that we're neutral. I think that this is a good idea, and I think DEQ did a really good job of explaining why business has an economic interest in making sure that our communities stay within an attainment designation. One of the, I think, benefits of the bill and as it introduced is that it allows communities, and I think DEQ does have this ability currently and authority to do this, is to work with communities to make sure that we can line up resources in order to ensure that either communities stay within an attainment designation or we figure out a way to get within an attainment designation so that we can continue to get permits as many of our members rely upon, or if we want to move to a new area that we're able to get the permits then and maintain our businesses. One thing, you know, that's difficult I think for DEQ is that EPA does provide the air quality standards, and when those happen, they happen at different times and at different rates. And right now, we're anticipating a new ozone standard that could be quite difficult, not only for Oregon but for the rest of the country. And so, as we look at projecting, you know, whether or not these communities, counties, or areas or airsheds are able to maintain their attainment status, it becomes very difficult to really forecast that based on evolving standards, anticipated litigation, and really using a three-year rolling average based on certain weather patterns that oftentimes do dictate how that rolling average occurs. So as the committee explores this bill and works with DEQ, we'd be very interested in having that conversation to make sure that whatever DEQ is reporting and whatever information that they're using, they're not actually sending out a letter to these communities saying that it can be passed on to businesses, say, hey, you're in trouble, we don't think you're going to be in attainment, therefore don't move to these communities. I think that that's some of the concern now when we talk about lining up resources to make sure that the communities are in attainment and to see if how business can help in those communications at the local level. I think that's useful. It's just I don't want this to be a tool to start, I think, as some of the conversations started to evolve, is let's choose which businesses we like and which businesses we don't in these communities where it's already, oftentimes it's already difficult enough to get these permits. So with that, I'll end my testimony. Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I think that nobody wants to see we want to see how we can address the problem, especially with some of the wood stove sourcing, to manage the problem as much as possible so we can continue to have economic development in these communities that are coming closer, especially with the proposed changes in the ozone standard. We're seeing more communities that could potentially be reaching that. And so it's not just going to be, I think, an issue in some of the ones that were on the map, but even in places like Hermiston and some of these other communities that were mentioned today. So, you know, it's very important, I think, that we figure out the best way to address the problem so that we can continue to attract businesses to Oregon.
Madam Chair, we have that same economic interest, right? I mean, this is a foundational issue for many of our industries in the state, and so we there are real economic impacts to losing that attainment status. So we would very much like to work with our community partners to make sure that we can maintain that status. And I think the wood stove is an interesting problem, and one that deserves more attention so that we can help where we're able to help, and especially those that are truly disadvantaged and have limited resources to really improve their predicament. So,
Representative Whiteman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike, I wonder maybe something you may want to reach out to some of your members and everything, but I'm looking at those and they're very depressed areas too that we're looking at. And to me, we should be incentivizing industries to be there, because when people are making more money, guess what? They don't enjoy having to burn their fireplace every night of the week. They don't enjoy having to light the wood stove. So, or at least I know their kids don't enjoy having to split it all the time, as somebody who was on that end. And I think we would do more benefit to a community by locating businesses in those areas and incentivizing them, and we would actually probably change the air quality by moving industry into some of those places. I'd be interested, you know, if you guys could look into that. You don't have to say anything to the committee here because I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but I think we would have more of a positive impact by looking at ways to get industry to locate there rather than incentivizing industry to move away from those areas.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I think we'd like to see incentives both for people that use the wood stoves to update their heating source, either whether it's just new wood stoves or if there's available natural gas or some other heat source that they can use. And of course, we're always interested in finding incentives for businesses to move into new areas and quite frankly, move into the state. I mean, AOI has that very much that interest. And so where unfortunately the Clean Air Act isn't quite as flexible, and that's some of our concern, is trying to operate within that regulated structure that makes this conversation a little bit more difficult. But yes, I'll talk to my members and get back to you about ways to do that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mike. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3254 and open a work session on House Bill 2632. And this is to remind you, this is the incentive program for large-scale solar, and it was heard, we had a public hearing on 217 and 219. Do we have the script? Okay. There is a -2 amendment. Beth, do you want to talk a little bit about what the amendment does?
Madam Chair and committee members, the -2 amendment authorizes program participants to receive funds from the public purpose charge for the above market cost of constructing and operating new renewable energy resources. If the participant receives funds pursuant to an agreement that was entered into before the effective date of the act.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Chair Riga Peterson, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated 3/11/2015.
Okay. Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated 3/11/2015. Is there any discussion? Okay. Any further discussion? Is there an objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. All right.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 2632 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 2632 as amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Colby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just trying to look through the fiscal to see what the fiscal impact of this was. As I recall, the bill was proposed to be funded through the general fund, and I'm curious if that's still the case.
It is with the original bill. The only thing the -2 amendment did was to make sure that you couldn't double qualify, so that's still the plan. That's why it's going to Ways and Means.
So the answer is it will be put in the Ways and Means Committee to see if there's general fund money to finance this program?
Exactly.
So, Madam Chair, as I went through this bill, I was concerned about that prospect from the very beginning to put this project or this proposal, which I very much support, in using general fund monies to finance it, because it puts it in competition with education, for example, that were, you know, and other parts of our budget, and really thought that a better mechanism was potential for funding this project. So I don't know that I'm going to be supporting moving this with the prospect that it becomes in competition with our general fund.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rep. Holvey. And we've talked about your concerns. And what I say is this is one of those bills that I think the policy, as the policy committee at Energy Environment, you know, this is policy that we have talked about and are agreeing to, and also, you know, in terms of the economic development in rural areas, this is one of the ways that we can do that. Now, whether or not it is at the level to compete with those other dollars, I think that's a decision that we need to have in Ways and Means on that. Representative Benz.
Madam Chair, I agree with your remarks. The underlying policy for the concept isn't just rural. I'll just point out that the idea was to bring a bill of industrial size to this committee so that we could consider the fact that we will be losing the 30% federal tax contribution or tax credit contribution to this kinds of projects next year. Mm-hmm. And that if we wanted to take advantage of that type of federal investment to help create the green energy necessary to meet, for example, demands that might come up down in the Klamath where the dams have to be taken out and we have to replace that power with green power, this might be the least expensive means of doing exactly that. But I've thought from the start that the right place for the debate over how the money gets spent is Ways and Means, and if education wins out, so be it. But that's up to those folks to weigh and balance those really tough decisions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there further? Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be voting for this bill because I think we do need to encourage large-scale solar. And at the same time, I share the concerns about how we're funding it. And the mechanism that I understand, if we were able to fund it right now, would be through some energy credits that the state would essentially buy from the developer of these projects. And I'll just throw this out, and I'd be happy to hear a comment from the more experienced members of this committee. I find it baffling the way that we're going about looking at the various programs to incent various types of good green energy projects, everywhere from tax credits to abatements. And the reason is, even from a policy perspective, it's hard to prioritize and rank them. Even in for my own analysis, and you know, if all we're doing is saying yes, this is a good thing, and throwing it over the wall to revenue, I find that very unsatisfying. So this has been bugging me for a while, so I thought I'd throw it out to the committee. I'd be happy for any wisdom and guidance from the members that have been doing this longer than I have.
Representative Rubin.
Well, it's not a new, if I may comment. There's no wisdom here. Make that really clear. It is troubling, I think, to all of us that sit on this side, that we are trying to identify good policy. We're on the wrong committee to make the final call. And so I may be applying for some other committee next time because of that. But that's where we're at. I think everybody here talks about the value of going and promoting large-scale solar. We need that. If we're ever going to get off coal and other fossil fuels, we've got to start moving that way. And this is the best mechanism I've seen so far to do it. It's certainly even way better than that Betsy they're kind of replacing. So I'm there with you, and I understand your concern. And
there's a number there.
But you're right.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think your points are extraordinarily good, and that is why I'm very happy we're going to be taking up this issue on Thursday, because you're just absolutely correct that we need a way of trying to weigh and balance these multitude of efforts to determine where to best invest our limited dollars. A great point. I look forward to Thursday's discussion.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, I'm fully supportive of solar, and I'm hopeful we can get to community solar as well. And I'm supportive of this proposal too. It's just frustrating when, as we speak of these federal incentives that might be going away, that we're sending this to Ways and Means where it will be competing in the general fund and most certainly will die. And so we are abandoning this proposal to get that bang for the buck, it seems to me. And so that's why I'm, you know, very troubled by it. I'm going to support the proposal. I think it's good policy, But I say that with a caveat that I think that we're sort of failing this program by not coming up with some other revenue source like ratepayers around the state that may be a little bit challenging, but I think is a better avenue for actually getting this proposal on the ground and developed.
Is there further discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byrd.
Aye.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Heim.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2632. And we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2988. Beth, would you be so kind to give us an explanation of the bill?
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2988 authorizes the Department of Environmental Quality to use money in the Residential Solid Fuel Heating Air Quality Improvement Fund to provide subsidies for the purchase of qualifying renewable fuels identified by the Environmental Quality Commission by rule.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And let's see, Representative Holby, why don't you kick us off?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee, for hearing House Bill 2988 and giving me an opportunity to talk about it. For the record, Paul Holby, State Representative, District 8. Though I try not to be always contrary in my thoughts, and this is a bill that, as we were speaking of about some of the problems with our airshed capacities, and we're talking about our limited airshed capacities for siting new business, which happens in my area a bit, and just thinking about those problems, and then recognizing from the work that DEQ has done, and how we have identified wood stoves as a major problem around the state, not just in our rural areas, but also our urban areas like Eugene and Portland as well. It really sort of brings to mind, what we really need to start taking action on this, and I really appreciate the chair focusing on this as well. And so this bill is basically an idea that I hope gets into the mix. And it probably goes to Ways and Means as well. I actually have another proposal somewhere else that was meant as a funding mechanism. Whether or not that pans out or not remains to be seen. But this bill is basically a simple concept. We have DEQ operates the Heat Smart program to help change out some of the inefficient old wood stoves with more efficient ones. And over the years, I've watched this program, and it has struggled with funding as well. And it's also struggled a bit with its success being winning over people in actually doing this, especially in terms of switching over to pellets. I've talked to several people who have gone through that process and then end up switching back to wood stoves because they say, gosh, I just can't afford the pellets. It's cheaper to burn wood. And so I really see sort of a problem right there with that program. And so what I was aiming at with this bill was actually changing a policy about the Heat Smart program, very simply to provide subsidies for the purchase of what's called qualifying renewable fuels as identified by the Environmental Quality Commission, which includes pellets. And so that was a simple concept that I'm hoping gets into the discussion about how do we deal with bringing down the emissions from wood stoves so that we can generate more airshed capacity for our communities for economic development and cleaner air to breathe. especially in the wintertime when we do have the inversions in many parts of the state, and which is the time that people burn their wood stoves the most. And so this bill is a pretty simple concept, and it also is aimed at trying to help our forests and getting them cleaned up by being able to utilize some of that biomass and trying to help the pellet industry in this state by providing this rebate program or subsidy for consumers to actually buy pellets, so that when they actually do convert to these cleaner wood stoves, essentially, that we can help them to afford that going forward. And, you know, it's left up to DEQ to establish the rules around, and they've already done that with their Heat Smart program, to figure out what areas in the state make sense to really focus on, you know, what the demographic of people that should be eligible for this, and so on. We do know that, you know, there are a lot of statistics out there about the use of wood stoves, who uses them, and using a lot of people do use them for their heat source, and some of them are of a lower socioeconomic status and have trouble affording things, and this is really aimed at trying to help those people, help our communities and help us by reducing the amount of pollution from some of the older burning wood stoves that aren't efficient anymore. So that's a real basic concept. You know, I imagine this bill probably goes to Ways and Means as well, you know, after my argument about the other one. You know, I could probably make the same argument against my own bill for the same reasons, but I won't. So with that, there is also a -1 amendment that would need to be adopted if the committee sought to go ahead and move this bill along by itself. That would be an amendment that I would definitely support. It is a little more specific language that DEQ thought would be necessary for this bill to be functional. And I hope someday that we actually are able to have the resources to implement the Heat Smart program, changing out wood stoves, and helping people purchase high-quality pellets, and helping that industry, helping our forests, while at the same time helping to clean the air. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer a question.
Is it going to be?
Rep
Widener.
I'll make it an easy one, Representative. Are you saying that your bill would face the Grim Reaper in Ways and Means?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was your one question. It looks like we have DEQ back. You and Rachel and Palmer, you want to come back up, please? Thanks again, and go ahead whenever you're ready.
So for the record, Palmer Mason, Legislative Coordinator for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
And Rachel Sakata, Air Quality Planner with the Oregon DEQ. So Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, as I mentioned, my name is Rachel Sakata. I'm an Air Quality Planner. And I am here today to provide information on House Bill 2988, which adds provision for qualified renewable fuels, including pellet fuels, to receive a subsidy through the Residential Solid Fuel Air Quality Improvement Fund. Now that's a mouthful. DEQ is neutral on this bill, but we would be happy to be a resource, and hopefully our testimony will inform the committee's consideration of House Bill 2988. Now, the Residential Solid Fuel Air Quality Improvement Fund was originally created in 2009 when the Oregon Legislature passed Senate Bill 102, which created the Heat Smart program, and that requires removal of an old uncertified stove at the time of home sale, as Representative Holvey mentioned earlier. Now, the intent of this bill was to accelerate the turnover of older uncertified wood stoves. As we've talked about previously, residential wood smoke can be a significant source of air pollution, and specifically of fine particulate, and oftentimes it's wood smoke that is the primary reason why local communities can exceed federal air quality health standards for PM2.5, and it's a problem that many Oregon communities have faced for a number of years. So the Residential Air Quality Improvement Fund was created to provide grants and subsidies for the replacement of uncertified wood stoves. Now, the intent was that DEQ could administer wood stove changeout programs and provide money directly to all high-risk communities in the state with an opportunity to cover the full costs of changing out and installing stoves for low-income residents, which we already have done in some instances, and providing no-interest loans, tax credits, home weatherization, and other incentives. Unfortunately, there has never been any funding in the Residential Air Quality Improvement Fund, and that is still true today. So some of the wood stove changes that we have done have come through one-time grants. House Bill 2988 would authorize the fund to be used to provide subsidies for the purchase of qualifying renewable fuels identified by the Environmental Quality Commission, including wood pellet fuel. Now, wood pellet fuel is a value-added product made from various sources of biomass, such as forestry activities or wood products manufacturing. Pellet fuel is used in residential pellet stoves, and these devices produce significantly fewer emissions than uncertified wood stoves. Pellet fuel can also be used in commercial applications like boilers for space heating of larger buildings. Now, if the state were to subsidize pellet fuel, it would be important to ensure that it is good quality fuel. The components of pellet fuel can be very diverse, and while most pellet fuel is made of hardwoods and softwoods, there can also be grass, corn, cherry pit, and wheat husk pellet fuels. So it can be really diverse there. DEQ would really need to understand what high-quality pellet fuel is and would want to talk to other agencies to ensure that only the best clean-burning fuel is subsidized. So House Bill 2988 would have a fiscal impact to DEQ. DEQ would have to do rulemaking. That would involve an advisory committee to help identify qualified renewable fuels, and also implementing fuel subsidies would likely require ongoing payments and would involve administrative costs. So in short, DEQ is committed to safe and clean burning renewable fuels for residents all across Oregon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Representative Reardon.
Just out of curiosity, how does, could you compare the clean burning qualities of wood pellets compared to, say, a natural gas?
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, I don't have that information right off hand, so I could certainly provide that for you later.
Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along that same line, is there any comparison between a modern clean burning wood stove and a pellet stove that's burning these high-quality pellets that you referred to in terms of emissions?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, yes. So, for example, a pellet stove currently burns probably about 2 to 3 times cleaner than existing wood stoves. However, the EPA has just recently come out with new standards mm-hmm. that would require both pellet stoves and wood stoves to meet the exact same standard. What I wanted to point out, though, is that with wood stoves, even the certified wood stoves, what can come into play is operator, how the person operates it. So you can have the cleanest burning wood stove right out there, but if someone's not using it correctly, for example, if they're burning wet wood or if they're damping down the stove at night, then it can really produce much higher emissions than what it's actually certified at. Whereas with pellet stoves, you basically, it's an automatic feed, so you just dump in the pellet fuels and the stove does all the work for you. So that's why they're typically a little bit cleaner burning.
Follow up.
So
is it possible to manufacture a wood stove that burns as clean as a pellet stove? I know EPA may be mandating it, but is that, I don't even know, but it seems to me like they're setting that bar incredibly high for wood stoves.
So, Madam Chair,
These are new guidelines, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, certainly there are clean burning wood stoves that can burn as cleanly as a pellet stove out there, and they're continually trying to tweak it and get them as clean as possible.
Okay. Representative Hurd.
I think when you spoke of dampening down the fire at night, are you talking about turning down the flue to make it burn slower?
Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, yes, that's certainly correct, because oftentimes what people like to do is just have a very slow burn on it, so then they don't have to create a new fire in the morning, but that creates a lot of smoke overnight and can contribute to the air quality problem.
So follow-up.
Follow-up.
over here is that, so I think, I mean, in most ways, unless you do something radically different involving a wood stove, you can't make it as efficient as a pellet, because you have to, as the person using the stove, you have to turn it down at night, otherwise you're going to be throwing a log in about every 1 hour, and that obviously doesn't make sense for the person using it, unless you do some sort of a catalytic converter or something, I guess, like you'd have on a pickup. That'd be electric driven, I would assume. That would burn up the excess soot or carbon or whatnot before it sends it out.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, part of what's really key in using a certified stove is, you know, education. And so one of the things that EPA recommends is that you burn small, hot fires. And so, for example, if someone is going to sleep at night, you know, they basically say let the fire burn out. So not even to let it dampen overnight, create that smoke, and then build a new fire in the morning, which I know can be inconvenient for some, but that's really where you get more efficient, good quality burns and cleaner emissions.
Final follow-up. But so I agree with your logic on how you achieve that. The problem is for the people that are poor and are chopping their own wood from their own property, letting the fire burn out at night is problematic during the winter for obvious reasons.
Certainly. Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, I guess one of the things that I want to point out, too, is that with the newer certified stoves. So, for example, if the low-income folks have an uncertified stove, they burn not nearly as efficiently, use a lot more wood. So if we're able to replace them with cleaner burning stoves, it can improve the efficiency by over half. It really makes a huge difference.
That's
there.
True.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, thank you both so much. That was very helpful. And then we have one other person who's here. Do we have... Levi Strayer. Welcome, whenever you're ready.
Thank you.
Don't forget to say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Levi Strayer, and I'm with Bear Mountain Forest Products. And we have two plant locations here in Oregon. We have a pellet mill plant in Brownsville, Oregon, and one up in Cascade Locks.
In beautiful House District 52.
So we are very familiar with the pellet industry.
In almost House District 8, almost.
And I'm here really to support the bill, the whole Heat Smart program, and the subsidies for the wood pellet fuel. And obviously with all the discussion going on here today, air quality is a major issue and a growing issue for our communities. And it's pretty clear that wood pellets are a way to burn cleaner, more efficient, and so we'd like to support this initiative. Some of the discussion earlier, just on the difference maybe with burning even well-seasoned cordwood versus a normal wood pellet, is a well-seasoned cordwood would be about 20% moisture content, whereas a wood fuel pellet could be as low as 2%, where a lot are in the 4 to 6% range. But even just that difference alone, you're not burning off all that extra excess moisture. And when you do, you're putting off excess smoke and wasted heat going out into the air too. So it's an easy way to burn a more efficient product and help clean up the air quality. I do want to touch on, with a wood stove, there are products out there that are like the pre-manufactured bricks, which are dried down to a lower moisture content than you'd see in the seasoned wood. So there are options with a wood stove to burn products such as that that can help become more efficient, just from the newer EPA wood stoves that we have with the Heat Smart program be incentivized to change out to. Over the past couple years, I do want to note that our pellet sales, and we sell mostly to the western United States, really has stabilized out. There's not much growth there, and we really would like to see some kind of incentive to get that in motion more, because it is an effective way to help our air quality, our local communities, and everything we've been talking about here today. But in short, I'll kind of to keep this prompt. You know, with our two plants here, we produce a lot of pellets. We employ a lot of people. with growth, we could employ a lot more. And we want to support local Oregon economy as we would help come back to us do the same. So we wholly support renewable biomass energy in addition to solar and wind and everything else that will help improve our communities. And appreciate your time. I'd like to open it up to any questions.
Thank you so much. I have questions for this witness. Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, you kind of spurred a question or just information about your company, because I've used your pellets quite a bit.
Thank you.
Are you manufacturing the blocks, too, that you were talking about, or the logs, or are you just only doing pellets?
We do manufacture a product called Bear Bricks.
Yeah.
It comes in two different sizes, but essentially it's debarked product, and it can come from small diameter logs. So earlier we were talking about the forest fires and that issue, because it does affect air quality. I firmly believe that. And there is opportunity, like the slash piles that get burned up as well. Mm-hmm. But those small diameter logs can be used to produce these bare bricks, and in turn go into wood stoves to help improve that efficiency too. But we do manufacture those here in Oregon.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Levi, thanks for being here today. Thanks for the good work you guys are doing at Cascade Locks.
My pleasure.
Tell me about access to your raw materials, i.e. biomass or whatever. Where do you obtain most of your product right now? Is it from the forestry industry, other domestic uses, you know, neighborhoods? Where do you get most of your product that you're converting into pellets?
Yeah, it's mostly from local lumber mills. Okay. So it's their residuals. Sawdust and shavings is what we obtain from them. So we're not cutting down trees specifically for ours. It's all a residual product, whether it's from, you know, the Mount Hood area or across the river in the Gifford Pinchot area, or predominantly right here in the Willamette Valley for our Brownsville plant.
Follow up. Are you equipped then to process virtually anything that would come to your yard, or does it have to be in the form of, you know, sawdust and or other, you know, milling byproducts? I mean, if they're bringing down trucks of slash from Mounted Forest to the plant, can you guys process that and convert it into pellets, or is that a whole different process?
Yeah, there has to be a certain quality standard there. Mm-hmm. For the pellets specifically, we do, for our Brownsville plant, we only take 100% Douglas fir. Which is predominantly what we have here mm-hmm. in the Willamette Valley. But, you know, Cascade Locks is a little bit more of a specialty plant where they can produce animal bedding products, animal bedding pellets, okay. and a lot of that type product can be used in those products.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Reardon.
Thank you. Just curious, do these, we've talked about wood stoves, are we also talking about fireplace inserts, and do they fit into the scheme of what could be upgraded?
The DEQ might be able to speak more of exactly what the Heat Smart program says, but the difference there, open fireplace is 50 times more inefficient than even, you know, your old burning wood stoves mm-hmm. and even the newer EPA certified ones. So if it's not, the inserts can certainly burn, like a pellet insert can certainly burn at the same efficiencies as a freestanding pellet stove. I think it's more difficult to manage, maybe, from what I've seen, because there's not a specific change out, because you just insert it into the fireplace. But it will certainly accomplish the same objective.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you for coming down.
Okay. Bill, did you want to come? Okay, looks like there's one more person here to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee, I apologize for not signing up, but there's a real good conversation going on here. Now, you know,
can you,
for the record, please. Bill Clothing Carpenters Industrial Council, this could be a good bill. We've talked about depressed areas, but I think, you know, we need to take a step back we got to make sure that we got a ready supply of pellets. These pellets are not, I'll be real honest with you, it's going to be an expensive process to make pellets. And if we're not careful, which has already happened in the past, I've seen people lined up 15, 20 pickups in a row waiting to buy pellets because they run out. We could find ourselves having to truck pellets in from Canada or even the South, where we got millions of tons right here in this state. And the graph that they had up there, you could probably put 50, 60 jobs, every one of those triangles or stars. Ways and Means is going to be a terrible place to go, but somehow we're going to have to shore up the people in this state that make wood pellets. And you talk about trying to keep a house warm in the winter. Wood pellets are going to be nice. But when the power goes off, you take a couple that's 70, 80, 85 years old, it's 20 degrees outside, and the power's been off for 4 days, 5 days, we have a problem. Every one of these houses is going to have a small generator just to keep the wood pellet stove running. A lot of folks don't know that. But that's another thing we have to look at. Like I said, this could be a good bill. It is a good bill. But somehow we're going to have to make sure that we have a ready supply, stable supply of wood pellets. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you so much for testifying. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2988. And I'm going to open a public hearing on both House Bill 3068 and 3253. Colleagues, these are the same exact bill. We just had great minds thinking alike in getting these drafted. Yes. So, Beth, could you provide the committee with a brief summary of the bills?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 3068 and House Bill 3253 direct the Department of Environmental Quality to conduct and study to develop recommendations for legislation to encourage homeowners to transition from older polluting wood stoves to cleaner burning wood stoves or other cleaner solid fuel burning devices or home heating system. And it directs DEQ to submit that report to the legislature on or before September 15th, 2016.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Representative Johnson, would you like to talk a little bit about the bill?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Well, colleagues, we've obviously, I've been on this committee for my second full session, and the issue of air quality standards and geography and all other kind of contributing factors continues to come up, and how we deal with society in rural Oregon and other parts of Oregon that rely upon wood heat for their basic needs is a problem that we need to address. So there is great room for improvement, I believe, on how we interact with our communities, how we interact with homeowners across the state of Oregon, especially in rural parts. So rather than simply limp along and perhaps deal with situations as they are being dealt with currently, I think there's room for a comprehensive plan and a program to try to come up with a way to address the problem, the situation that works for people, that works for homeowners, that works for rural communities. So that's what I went down to LC with, and this is what they gave to us, and looks like the same thing for you, Madam Chair. So I think it's a step in the right direction. There is a fair amount of testimony that was submitted online by interesting folks from the Oregon Environmental Council, which I think is fine. I guess my one concern would be that they reference certain neighborhood groups and certain activist groups that would like to participate in. My concern would be that we would not allow enough room for the rural communities impacted by this to have I think, the lion's share of input on how to interact with the air quality issue in their community. So, but with that, I'll let you interact, Madam Chair, and contribute your input as well.
Yeah, no, this is, thank you. And that was exactly it. This was just an attempt to start, to continue the conversation that we've been having over last session and this session about this issue of the non-attainment status, about what was, you know, found to be the primary source of the air particulate matter and how we can address that, and acknowledging the fact that there are programs in place that DEQ has been running that haven't been funded and haven't, so the scope of what they're able to accomplish is actually limited by the amount of funds they have, and see if there's a way to come up with some better solutions. So with that, why don't we have Rachel and Palmer, why don't you guys come back up to provide your testimony about this bill?
Starting to feel familiar. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason, legislative coordinator with the Department of Environmental Quality.
And I'm Rachel Sakata, near quality planner, also with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. So, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, I'm here today to provide information for House Bill 3068 and 3253. Now, these bills direct the Department of Environmental Quality to study and develop recommendations for legislation to reduce wood stove smoke and to report back to the legislature by September of 2016. Now, the bill gives us an opportunity to find new ways to address wood smoke and prevent communities from being burdened by the non-attainment designation. DEQ supports both of these bills. So as I've mentioned before, wood smoke is a problem in communities all across Oregon as they struggle to meet federal health standards for PM2.5. PM2.5, I don't think I mentioned, you know, is basically fine particulate 2.5 microns and smaller. Just to give you some perspective, a strand of hair is 70 microns. So PM2.5 is really, really small. And because of this, it can be easily inhaled and reach the deepest part of our lungs. It is known to cause or contribute to respiratory disease, asthma, heart attacks, and even premature death. Wood smoke also contains toxic organic compounds known to cause cancer. And wintertime residential wood smoke is the most significant source of fine particulate matter in most communities in or on the verge of non-attainment. So, as we mentioned earlier, the cities of Klamath Falls and Oak Ridge violate the federal daily fine particulate standard, and other communities such as Lakeview and Prineville also exceed the standard, but have not yet been designated as non-attainment areas. And there are also half a dozen of other communities that are at risk from elevated fine particulate levels, including Hillsborough and Burns. So these communities that are declared non-attainment face serious public health and economic burdens. As we've discussed, a non-attainment status imposed by the Clean Air Act not only means that the air is unhealthy, but it creates an economic burden on a community by imposing stricter requirements on new and existing industry, and can be that deterrent to attracting new business. We work closely with the city of Hillsborough, Washington County, Burns, Prineville, and Lakeview once we saw that they could be at risk of non-attainment. We've also provided technical assistance and support to these areas, as well as funding to former non-attainment areas to help them ensure that they do not violate the standard again. Uncertified wood stoves are certainly a huge part of the problem, as they emit up to 70% more particulate air pollution and 25% more benzene than the newer certified wood stoves that meet the federal emission standards. So smoke from uncertified wood stoves can also affect indoor air quality and create poor air quality both inside and directly outside the home. DEQ currently estimates that there are about 150,000 homes with an uncertified wood stove. So to really help these communities address wood stove smoke, we need long-term strategies and new ideas to help them avoid non-attainment. So DEQ has had some success with wood stove changeouts and working with communities to institute wood stove burning prohibitions during poor air quality days. But in the case of wood stove changeouts, that funding can be sporadic and limited. So House Bill 3068 and 3253 create a new opportunity to re-examine how the state works works with communities and stakeholders to finance improvements in cleaner air, and we will be able to explore new ideas about sustained resources for stove replacement and new strategies to reduce smoke in at-risk communities during the stagnation events that threaten health and non-attainment. So if we are able to directly address wood stove smoke in PM2.5 affected communities, we can help solve and prevent any non-attainment problems. So in order to identify these strategies and ideas and conduct the study and develop recommendations that House Bill 3068 and 3253 have directed DEQ to do, we envision creating a task force or perhaps an advisory committee to assist DEQ. And these bills, the bills also direct DEQ to consult with other agencies, and we hope that we might be able to work with Department of Energy, Department of Forestry, Oregon Health Authority, the Public Utilities Commission, and maybe Business Oregon, and other stakeholders to research and brainstorm some ideas. So House Bill 3068 and 3253 also directs the DEQ to develop recommendations for strategies to encourage the use of biomass, and DEQ sees this as an opportunity to have a conversation with other agencies and stakeholders about what clean biomass is and include the possibility of increasing the production and use of wood pellet fuel in Oregon. So DEQ looks forward to collaborating to the opportunity of collaborating with other agencies and stakeholders to identify strategies to find cleaner burning alternatives. Overall, DEQ is committed to creating a healthier environment for all Oregonians by reducing levels of fine particulate and air toxics. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Madam Chair, if I might add, I did want to let the committee know that DEQ is working with Representative Holby to put an amendment that would change the bill slightly. The bill is primarily focused on replacing older wood stoves, and we our suggestion to the committee was to broaden the focus a little bit so that we can look at all the strategies that would reduce wood smoke. So just take a slightly broader look.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for this? Representative
Benz. At the risk of sounding flippant, how many wood stoves could we buy for the cost of the study?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, just to give you an idea of how much it costs to replace an old uncertified wood stove, it in programs that we've run with local communities, it can be between $3,000 to $5,000. And that's for the full cost of purchasing and installing a stove. And that covers anything from a replacement with a new certified wood stove to a pellet stove to something like a ductless heat pump.
Certified electrician.
And follow up. And the cost of the study.
I can respond to that, Madam Chair, Representative Benz. This is a case where the folks like Rachel, who have been working on the air quality programs, problems associated with wood stoves, actually they have been finishing work in Lake View and Klamath Falls, so we actually have capacity at the department to try to do this study without, you know, either asking for additional resources or without looking for a dollar amount to do the study. We have the people to do the work, and we are committed to doing the work. We see this as priority.
Follow up. Work it now, then.
Yeah. And that brings us to, I do, that was the right word, that last, we see this as priority. It would be good to see what that list of priorities is, because knowing that Lakeview does have 2,200 people in it and burns about the same, mm-hmm. I'm very hopeful and happy that we can reduce the particulate in those communities, and we should. But that priority piece is pretty important. So knowing that, perhaps there's more people in Portland or Salem or almost any town. So how we direct you or attempt through the budget process to direct is pretty important. So I'd sure like to see that priority list. So, yeah, not that it isn't important, but I'm sure there's a long list of important things.
So, well, Madam Chair, Representative Metz, we could certainly talk about and provide you that priority list. I guess I just want to be really, really clear here. Whether we're talking rural Oregon or urban Oregon, wood smoke is a significant source of air toxics. So this bill has the benefit of being helpful to both communities. I certainly understand with the rural communities, and we talked a lot about it earlier in today's hearing, of the added economic challenges they have around the permitting. So there perhaps is even an extra reason to work hard to do that. But this helps us really focus on a problem that is true both in urban and rural Oregon.
If I may, Madam Chair, this is just going back to Representative Helms' remark. And in a vacuum, we can make anything really important. So the only way it makes any sense is if you can show us the list against which you're measuring all those bad things you're now talking about. Because I agree with you, they're all bad. But it's kind of like going into Ways and Means and talking about what's good. It's all good, right? So I need something to measure all the bad against. That's the point.
And I think, Representative Bentz, I think we do have that information. I mean, we have looked at the sources that contribute to air quality problems in the state, and this is one of the primary sources that contribute to that problem. But we can certainly provide the list so that you have the full comparison.
That's what we're looking for. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you. And I'm going to say something now that will maybe wake you all up. But with all due respect, I'm about ready to reinstate the urban-rural divide because there are so many differences in our policies that we make and if we apply it to everybody, how they impact them. And in my opinion, I think, you know, Palmer, you're right, wood smoke is an issue. Car emissions are an issue. In Portland area, you put those two together, that's what causes the air quality problems. It's not out in my district. You saw how clean my district is. And a lot of people in my area use wood fires to, you know, to heat their homes. And it's not realistic when it's 20 below, and it gets 20 below, to build a small fire, let it burn out. Because in the morning, your house is going to be about 30 degrees inside. And, you know, if you guys need to consider the differences. Mm-hmm. And I'd really like to know is, with, I'm glad you're doing all this work and everything, but what are your goals and what are your intentions? And if they are to outlaw or ban wood stoves unless they're the very high-end ones, that's not a good thing because most people can't afford them. And unless there's going to be, you know, some sort of new kind of tree growing that doesn't, you know, pollute or whatever, but, you know, it's just the way it's being put out there, it makes me very nervous because a lot of my constituents rely on a very primitive lifestyle. Some of them don't even have electricity. You know, they don't subscribe to a lot of the services that you guys who live in towns take for granted. And so I just think that, you know, some of the things like the car pollutions and things like that, that you count on your air quality and you just overlay it in the whole state, it's really not, it's apples and oranges for one thing, but it's not really fair to those who are struggling economically. And it's easy. It's easy for people who don't deal with that. For example, we don't have mass transit. We don't have MACs in our area. We do have a bus system, but it's not what you've got in Portland in that area. It's not easy to ride a bike everywhere. You know, it's distances are too far, et cetera. But there, I mean, we could go on for a while, but I'm just saying that I think we need to make sure that we keep in mind there are differences in this state. And they affect what policies we make here affect different areas differently. Yeah, and just so you know, there are many of them in my district, and I'm sure other rural areas, who care very much about their quality of life, air quality, water quality, all that, and work very hard to live a clean lifestyle. And so it's not just, you know, you can't just say, and now we're going to do this, and now we're going to do this, and not have it be a big impact.
And Madam Chair, Representative Boone, I hopefully wasn't implying when I said that wood smoke is an issue for both urban and rural area that we should ignore that they are different places and people have different lifestyles and different needs. That wasn't my point. My point was simply if we look at the sources that contribute to air quality problems, this is a significant source in both places, with the added problem in some of our rural communities of being either so close or over the standard that the permitting gets that much more difficult, and to Representative Widener's point, then helping those depressed areas move from economic depression to something better gets that much harder. So that is our interest in trying to avoid that obstacle. So again, as I was saying before, businesses make a choice based on business-related factors, not based on a permitting decision. But I hear you loud and clear. There are rural and urban Oregon are different places, and so we, you know, if this bill or either one of these bills were passed by the legislature, we would need to look at putting a group together to help us understand that, to Representative Johnson's point about making sure there's representation from rural Oregon, to understand how they could switch to better fuels or to better heating devices.
Well, and follow up, Madam Chair, thank you. And just as a note of fact, even where I live, I cannot get natural gas. It doesn't go out that far. Mm-hmm. I have propane, and I put in a propane furnace system as a backup. But I use what I've got, and in a lot of cases, people don't have access to these other. I would love to put solar on my shop, and I will. And if I think that's what we should be doing, is helping people transition to renewables as much as possible, and even allowing little turbines in the water, in the river, if you're on a river system or whatever, because that is what's going to clean things up.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Boone, excuse me, is that something that DEQ would certainly like to investigate? I know it's a struggle that we faced in Lakeview, for example, the community that also does not have natural gas. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to figure out, you know, what strategies would work for them in dealing with wood stove smoke because they didn't have the option of natural gas devices. I think one of the things that we'd like to look into is you know, focusing on getting the old uncertified stoves out and then figuring out what cleaner burning alternatives we can provide them with, whether it's a certified wood stove, whether it's pellet stove, whether it's solar, something else that makes sense for that community. And I think another thing that we'd also like to do too is try and look at options for low-income households. You know, can we look into heating subsidies for them so that they don't freeze and can use alternate sources of heat? We really would like to explore lots of different options to make to see what would work for folks.
And I'll add, and this will be a report that comes back to the legislature for your consideration. So, you know, there'll be another step in the process for some more input.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Representative Boone is exactly right, that any work or any research that comes out of this or study really needs to value and appreciate the differences in lifestyles from rural and urban Oregon. And I'll point out to some testimony that was submitted from the Oregon Environmental Council on behalf of this bill, which gives me pause, i.e. maybe the need for another amendment in this bill, because OEC talks about a work group that they've had regarding air qualities, and the group consists of DEQ, LRAPA, the Oregon Health Authority, Washington, Multnomah, Clackamas Counties, Neighbors for Clean Air and Beyond Toxics, which may be fine, but I'm not very optimistic that this group is going to adequately represent rural Oregon, and that's why I think I'd like to get an amendment here, making sure that there's adequate representation so that the needs, we don't have folks in the urban area imposing their desires upon those who live in Burns and Baker and outside of the community or
the North Coast,
or Cannon
the
Beach.
Very clean North
exactly.
Coast.
Yeah, so I just want to get that on the record.
All right.
So,
thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, it certainly wouldn't be our intent to stack the deck or make sure there isn't a broad representation, but if an amendment makes that clear, we have certainly no objection to that, and that'd be fine.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
We have a few people who've signed up to testify, so let's call up Carrie Neeson and Chris Hagerbomber.
No wrap up? No, I don't.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. I just want to start by really thanking for all the patience and the thoughtful debate that you have. I really appreciate the good work that you do. My name is Carrie Neeson, and I work for the American Lung Association of the Mountain Pacific. And the American Lung Association strongly supports consumers switching to cleaner burning wood stoves and using cleaner home heating options. Cleaner options produce fewer emissions, which will result in cleaner air and a healthier Oregon. Our respiratory systems are equipped to filter out the larger particles in smoke, but our lungs are vulnerable to the smaller particles, which can easily slip past our respiratory natural defense systems and interfere with our oxygen uptake and cause airway inflammation. Toxic and cancer-causing compounds can hitchhike into the lungs on particulate matter and be directly absorbed into the lungs. Many Oregonians are at risk for particle matter exposure. Our youth are particularly at risk. Our children breathe more deeply than adults and often spend more time outside. Pound for pound, they inhale more toxics, and 80% of our lung development happens after we're born. Exposure to air pollution and air toxics can prevent our youth's lungs from fully developing. Adults over 65, Oregonians with chronic diseases like asthma, COPD, cardiovascular diseases, and diabetes are also at increased risk. People who work outdoors, exercise outdoors, live or work near highways, and those with lower incomes are also at increased risk. Children living in communities where wood smoke is prevalent experience decreases in lung capacity and increases in asthma attacks, respiratory illnesses, emergency room visits, and school absences. Nearly 500,000 Oregonians are at risk for serious lung conditions. Our asthma prevalence is significant. If you don't have a family member with asthma, you likely know someone who does. Taking proactive steps for cleaner air will save our lung health and save lives. House Bill 3253 and House Bill 3068 are good steps for continuing our efforts to clean our air, creating a healthier Oregon.
Thank you. Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee, my name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I'm the deputy director at the aforementioned Oregon Environmental Council, and I'm here today in support of both of these bills. I don't know about you, but I love a fireplace. I like the ambiance of a wood stove, but as Carrie just described, they really do have health impacts on people, both short-term and near-term. And when we're talking about air quality standards set by the federal government, we really are talking about protecting people's health. I was very struck by a statistic that EPA estimates that a single fireplace operating for an hour and burning 10 pounds of wood will generate 4,300 times more carcinogenic PAHs than 30 cigarettes. So it's a very serious issue. On the rural and urban part, I was also surprised to learn when the Portland Air Toxics Study was done that wood smoke really comes out on top of and with along with diesel as being the major source of air toxics in Portland, and that about a third of Portland area residents burn wood at some point or another. So this is both, as was mentioned, an urban and a rural issue. Besides the toll on our health, wood smoke pollution has a financial cost. There's the cost of medical care, prescription drugs, reduced productivity, lost work time, and missed school days. And then, as was talked about earlier, in those areas of the state that are in jeopardy of not meeting the PM2.5 standards or that don't meet those, it's really important to reduce wood smoke pollution for economic development to occur. So we believe that both DEQ and LRAPA, the Lane Regional Air Pollution Authority's programs, they're good programs, and they do take into account that wood burning is part of Oregon's culture, and that some communities don't have the option for using, for example, natural gas to heat their homes. So there's been a really strong emphasis on voluntary measures, and I think that we can continue to do a lot with voluntary measures. But it's a great thing, these bills that would review everything that is being done and see places where we could make improvements. And it's important. So the OEC started having conversations with folks who were interested in this issue over a year ago. And indeed, the folks that are mentioned, DEQ and some of the local county health departments, Clackamas and Washington and Multnomah County have been involved, and some of the advocacy groups that care about work air quality. We are very concerned about equity impacts associated with wood smoke programs. So I mentioned lower income neighborhoods. I guess in my mind also a lot of rural Oregon is lower income, and I had incorporated that into my thinking. But absolutely, every community that has this issue should be involved in informing the work group process. So thank you for considering these bills, and we look forward to what comes next.
Representative Boone.
Thank you. Maybe the hour is late, but did I hear you say wood burning lowers economic development?
The idea is we need to reduce wood smoke in the communities that was talked about in the very beginning of this session. We need to reduce wood smoke in the communities that are having troubles with PM 2.5 because then that would allow industry to grow in those communities. The very first bill that you discussed today.
It can be a barrier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. The new industry.
Got it. Okay. That, yeah, I wasn't tracking on that.
Sorry that I wasn't speaking clearly.
Yeah, that's all right.
Representative Wyden.
Thank you. And just one other question. Did I hear you say that wood smoke causes diabetes?
No, people with diabetes are more affected by wood smoke than a person who doesn't have diabetes or other chronic illnesses. I did not say there was a causal relationship.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I implied that.
Because I have a son who's diabetic, and lots of family members who are type 2. So,
yeah.
And that's a bummer.
Okay. Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bills 3068 and 3253 and close the meeting of House and.